You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, back in stereo style, on April 10, 2014. And here we are, back again in bad duo style. This is Features Editor Johnny G, and I am here with the main man, the champion, the boss. Here we are with managing editor Adam White. Adam White, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Today was good. You know, you have one of those days where you just, you get to the end of it and you think, this was great. I got shit done. Nothing exploded. It was warm outside. You know, good day.
And Adam, I see that you just got your brand new fancy smancy record player.
I do. It's sitting in a box at my feet right now.
Oh, are you just enjoying its essence before you even open it?
I can't open it because I got to talk to you.
Mm. Oh, you mean right now? Oh, so I'm preventing you from opening up your fancy new record player. Well, that's fancy.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a couple days, I think, before this sucker's up and running fully. I built some shelves where I'm moving all of my stereo equipment to, specifically because they're out of, like, toddler range. So she can't reach them, which is good because where I used to have it, she would just like wander over and start like pressing buttons and flipping dials and stuff like that. She once got like a face full of static by doing that, which was kind of cruel but funny. So the new place where it's going to go doesn't have any power yet, so I got to do some electrical wiring this weekend. So getting there.
And Adam, I got to say, this week it's just us two, and I'm super excited because for a little while, it was just us two for a few weeks in a row, and I enjoy when it's just you and me, Adam. It's our special time together on the Punk News Podcast.
I just kind of like that it's like a middle finger to that guy who wrote us last week and said, you guys should have more voices on who aren't you guys.
Yeah, if the Punk News, last week somebody wrote in a letter explicitly saying that he liked Adam and I, but he's more interested when there are more diverse voices. So Adam and I have done the exact opposite of diversity and cut out everybody else except us two from the Punk News Podcast.
Which is really how we should respond to most letters.
Well, I mean, it is kind of punk rock doing the exact opposite of what anyone asks you to do, no matter how reasonable the request.
Mm-hmm. And that was a super reasonable request because, man, I wouldn't want to listen to just me, but hey.
Adam, I could listen to you all day, Adam. And speaking of people that could listen to you all day, we got an email. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is an email from Mark, and this is Mark calling us out. And I got to tell you, I kind of think Mark's right on calling us out on this. He says, you guys do a great job discussing the Fest, Pooja Fest, and Punk Rock Bowling, but you never talk about the biggest festival going on in punk rock today, the Montebello Rock Fest, a.k.a. Amnesia Rock Fest. And he says, the lineup is pretty crazy. I'm not entirely sure why a festival with enough dough to draw bands like Blink-182 and NoFX and attendance levels that exceeded the total of the Fest, Pooja Fest, and Punk Rock Bowling combined doesn't even get a news entry. I understand that most of the staff are U.S., but Canadian managing editor Adam White, he should be hip enough to catch this one. Here's what he says. I don't really like festivals that much, but for those in the U.S. who are unfamiliar with this festival, I can provide a little insight. Montebello is a tiny, picturesque resort town located on the Ottawa River, halfway between Ottawa and Montreal, slightly closer to Ottawa. It has about 900 residents, not even big enough for a McDonald's. The main attraction is a luxury resort called Chateau Montebello that caters to high-end business professionals. That's it. There isn't anything else except for a few farms and a marina. So when tens of thousands of punk rockers ascend on it every June, it's quite a sight to see. And I'm just going to briefly read. I mean, Mark had a pretty long email here, and he had a lot to say, but I'm just going to summarize the rest. He says, the festival's mania itself. I went in 2011 and 2012 when attendance levels were around 10,000 to 12,000, and again in 2013 when it was almost 35,000 in attendance. I'm not rough and rugged enough to experience the camping part of the thing, but you can find tents sprawled all over surrounding roadsides and farm fields. It's pretty crazy. Plenty of interesting characters if you are into making new friends. Lots of alcohol and lots of drugs are around, but it's extremely safe and I've never once felt uncomfortable. Quebec punks are friendly and they just want to party 24/7. So I gotta say, I gotta give props to Mark for this. And at Mark's request, we will do a post because we really should for this Amnesia Rock Fest. This is just some of the bands are going to be there. Blink 182, Motley Crue, Weezer, Alice in Chains, Megadeth, Primus, NoFX, Danzig with Doyle, Mastodon, The Used, Lagwagon, Gaslight Anthem, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, Streetlight Manifesto, Real Big Fish, Big Wig, Face to Face, Strung Out, Black Flag, and interestingly, Henry Rollins as well, Cox, Sparrer, Fear, New Dead Kennedys, Misfits, in addition to Danzig, which is interesting, Suicidal Tendencies, Joan Jett, Brand New, Taking Back Sunday, Venom, Cannibal Corpse, Henry Rollins doing speaking engagement, MXPX, Guttermouth, The Vandals, Alkaline Trio, Newfound Glory, a tribute to Tony Sly, let's see, anybody else here, St. Catharines, Planet Smashers, H2O, Chain of Strength, Judge, Ignite, Glassjaw, Earth Crisis, let's see, anybody else here, Devil's Brigade, which is Matt Freeman of Rancid, Title Fight, Bane, Negative Approach, Implants, let's see, who else, anybody else here that we would care about. So anyway, it's a pretty big festival with a lot of bands that a lot of people are really into. So, I mean, wow, that's a big festival.
It is, and I'm trying to wrap my head around what our collective amnesia is about this, because my initial thought was to say that, well, oh, okay, it's in Quebec, and just the way that we sometimes treat things in Quebec, it may as well be in Germany, but that's not necessarily the case, especially when it comes to Pooza, which we talk about. So it's, I feel that on the one hand, because this is one of these items that I think is organized outside of our scene and has not, I guess, hasn't really, not to a fault, but hasn't really like made, I don't know, hasn't reached out to talk to us or to promote it to us or anything like that. It's been easy enough to ignore. I mean, like I've seen the posters for Amnesia in the past, and it's one of those things that has just like such a weird diversity of bands on it that I look at it and there's part of my brain that goes that like, oh, this looks like it's like the local rock station put on their, you know, let's get everyone we can festival. And I know that's not accurate at all. I mean, this guy just said that like everyone's having a good time and it's friendly and da 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 da, and it's not like weirdly corporate, but maybe that's like in my head what I've had is that, oh, like that's a weird corporate thing. They don't need punk news to give a shit about what's going on. I don't know. That's not right. I'm not saying that that's a valid opinion. I'm just trying to figure out why we've ignored it, because I've definitely seen it kind of year on year, but it has never really struck me as something that's on our radar, and I don't really know why, given the lineup.
Well, actually, I think your corporate, I guess, identification is actually sort of accurate. If you look, the website looks very much like one of these big, you know, summer rock fests, and like Budweiser is stamped all over everything. And so while Mark is saying the audience is cool, it seems the organizer is very much a business. And not that I'm against business or whatever, but whenever I see, like, you know, Budweiser and this and that, my eyes glaze over. And honestly, I saw Budweiser and I saw Motley Crue. And frankly, I didn't investigate further, you know, because really Motley Crue is kind of out of place on that bill. But so I mean, I guess that's why we didn't dig into it deeper. And you're right, is I don't know if this festival has taken efforts to work from the ground up rather than just advertise from the top down. But that's not necessarily fair to the fans, because as Mark was saying, the fans seem pretty cool. So I don't know, we do a news post. And as always, if you want something to get posted at Punk News, submit a news post yourself, or, you know, send one of the editors a request to do an interview, and maybe you can do an interview with one of the bands or the organizers on the bill.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking, and we did post about it last year, but I mean, like, there's that amnesia thing, I guess, where like, even, it's funny, which is because the name of the thing, even though we posted about it, I still didn't even remember us ever posting about it. I was willing to accept that we've never even spoken about it before. Yeah, I don't know why we have a blind spot for this thing, because it's big. I don't know if it feels like, I feel that I don't get that level of excitement out of the bands, maybe. Like, you hear everyone talking and chatting on Twitter and stuff like that as we, like, get close to Fest, for example. But I don't ever recall anyone talking about this. And I don't know why, but we're going to talk about it now. So we're talking about it.
We're talking about it right now, baby. We're talking about it right now.
That's pretty good.
I guess last thing about that. I mean, Now, perhaps unfairly, but French Canadians have been branded as being walled in and not necessarily wanting to communicate with people outside of French Canadian or French Canada. Do you think that's an aspect of that?
I don't think so. I mean, they're all perfectly, you know, hospitable and friendly people whenever I've been there.
Yeah, but that's because
you're
married to one. Maybe they have to be nice to you.
No. That I mean, there are certain elements, I'm sure, that maybe look a little bit I'm trying to be real diplomatic here. I guess I just shouldn't. I've gotten that kind of snooty, oh, you're not going to speak French. I'm gonna have my nose up at you thing from them before. And I remember that, like, there was a point where, like, me and my wife were in Quebec City, and you would have they would come over to the table, and they would kind of look at us and go, okay, you are tourists, and then, like, kind of, like, break into English. And then, but my wife can speak fluent French, so at one point, like, we had to wait until, like, the waiter would walk up to the table, and I'd purposefully avert my gaze so that he couldn't see, so he wouldn't, like, look at me and start a conversation, so then my wife could start a conversation in French with him. And then sometimes they'd break into English anyways, because, but I'm just going to attribute that to, you know, some waiter that was a jerk. When I was in Montreal for Pooza last year, everyone was perfectly nice. I mean, Montreal's not really representative of the rest of Quebec because it has, you know, more of a language mix than, you know, elsewhere. But
Adam, I don't know. Your wife is French Canadian, right?
Yeah, but not, but Ontario French. So there's pockets of French that are in Ontario that are kind of like isolated places, like Welland, Ontario, places like Sudbury, Ontario, a bunch of places in the north. But those are kind of just like little local communities. And they're, you know, in a sea of English, and they even have, you know, I'm sure that if you went to talk to people in Quebec, they'd think that the Ontario French people speak a weird variant of French that's not the same either. So
my question would
be, it's difficult. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that anyone...
Adam, you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was your question?
My question was, is culturally, I mean, is your wife like a French girl? I mean, is she like a French person, or are there aspects of that, or does she seem more, I guess non-French Canadian? I almost want to say more North American than French.
Yeah, I would say North American. I mean, it was like, you know, her father spoke it to her in the home when they were young, and you can still find, you know, you go to Welland and there's still, you know, bilingual street signs and stuff like that, and I'm sure that there's, you know, pockets of old people and stuff like that want to speak French to each other most of the time. But, you know, you're in such a world of English that you can't really be that removed from it. Like, you could be, you know, you could be in like some rural place in Quebec and just speak French all the time and pretty much avoid having to speak English a lot. But it's not like that in Ontario, wherever there's pockets of French here. It's, you know, you're way too in the mix. So
I guess the last question about this, not to try, will you be teaching your daughter French, or will your wife be teaching your daughter French?
Yeah, that is the big question, and we are.
I think you should.
I mean, I'm not, because I'm horrible. But
you can say we a lot. We.
Well, we're intending to put her into French school, and my wife speaks to her in French. But I mean, like, she's a baby, so I don't know how much she comprehends of anything. But so we're kind of like using a mix of both for her. But yeah, that's the intent. My main reason is that without being fully bilingual, she can't be prime minister. So if I want to use my children to, like, conquer the political landscape, they have to be bilingual.
Are you worried about your wife and your daughter having a secret communication that you can't understand? Or is it void because mothers and daughters have a secret communication that we males can't understand anyways?
Both.
Like, well, so you are worried about your wife and your daughter.
I am worried, but that other thing is also worrying. So double worried.
Well, speaking of secret communication, Adam, let's you and I talk in our secret communication. That is the speak of Vinyl Nerdia. Record Store Day. By the time you hear this, it'll basically be Record Store Day. It'll actually probably be exactly Record Store Day by the time you hear this. Adam White, are you pumped for Record Store Day this year? You know, more and more, every year Record Store Day gets more criticism. People say it's corporate. You know, record stores don't make any money. That kind of thing. Are you? And there's always the jerkwad that says, every day's Record Store Day. That's why I don't go to the record store on Record Store Day. I hate that guy. You guys all know him. I hate him. Anyway, Adam, what's your opinion on Record Store Day?
I don't know what that guy's accomplishing. But yeah, that guy exists. It's kind of like the I hate to criticize this other thing, but I guess I'm going to, like, the buy nothing day that happens at, like, Black Friday. Like, I get the intent of the people that participate in that and what kind of social cause they're trying to put forward there and the comments on materialism and blah, 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 blah. But it's one of those, like, this form of protest really will affect no one. Like, it's completely and utterly toothless. You're, like pissing into the wind. So, anyways, yeah. So that guy who's going to be staying home out of some sort of mock rage, that's cool. I'm just kind of looking at this as an excuse to drive up to Hamilton and go to a few stores I don't get to go to a lot. So I'm not even really all that worried about hunting down kind of exclusive stuff. I'm just like, I want to go to like a record store when it's like, you know, busy with people that are excited to be in a record store and make a day out of it. So that's what I'm doing. That's the plan, at least.
I'm excited. I said this last year, and it seemed to be not as bad this past Black Friday record store, but the year before Record Store Day was brutal price-wise, like $15, $12 for a 7-inch, $35 for a 12-inch. I can't be having that, you know? But the fundamental purpose of Record Store Day, I'm super excited about. And for me, Record Store Day is a day of the year where everything is wonderful. No, Record Store Day is a day of the year where bands can put out more obscure things that hardcore fans will really like, that in general they can't put out because there's not enough of a demand for it. And also, you know, the criticism of Record Store Day is that stuff's too expensive, which I agree with. So hopefully prices will be a little bit better this year. But also that Record Store Days actually lose money on Record Store Day. I've spoken to 3 record store owners about that, and they've all said that that's not true, and that profit, not gross sales, but profit-wise, Record Store Day is clearly their best day of the year. So I don't think the criticism that record stores lose money on Record Store Day is valid. And I asked—I didn't go to like a major chain, but I asked a very big independent chain out here called Streetlight. I asked a medium chain, a medium store, single store out in Delaware called Jupiter Records, which I'm a big fan of. They say they make money, and I asked a very small store out in not Ardmore in Pennsylvania, Paoli, somewhere between Paoli and Ardmore, maybe it is Ardmore in Pennsylvania, Shady Dog Records, and they say they make tons of money that year. So I'm all for record stores making money this year making money on Record Store Day. But man, there's some really cool stuff coming out this year that I'm super excited for. I'm just going to name a couple of things. Flaming Lips have got another 12-inch EP coming out called Seven Skies H3. I have no idea what that is, but if that's a reasonable price, I'm definitely going to get that. But here's what I'm super excited for. 2 things. First, Off is coming out with a 7-inch with 2 exclusive tracks called Learn to Obey. I'm super excited about that. Also, Adam, you'll be pumped for this. The Pogues are finally releasing one of their recordings live with Joe Strummer. The Pogues live with Joe Strummer. An entire concert from the tour, I think it was 89, where the Pogues toured with Joe Strummer without Shane McGowan, with Joe Strummer on lead vocals. That's going to be super exciting.
That is the thing that, like, of anything that I'm really got my eye on. Like, I got to go find that one.
You want to know a secret? You want to know a secret little hint, Adam, that just you and I and the listeners will know about?
All right.
If you can't get that on Record Store Day, it's not the end of the world, because in the UK, there's a very reasonably priced Pogues box set. It's about $50 American. You get all 4 or 5 first Pogues album, but you also get that Joe Strummer album on CD. So 6 albums for about $50, which is pretty reasonable. I mean, you got to buy all the Pogues albums if you already have them. It's kind of a bummer. But if you can't get that record, then at least you can get the music, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on this list that's interesting. Now, I made a point of pulling up the Canadian list here. So I don't know how...
That's probably different than the American list.
I think it might have less stuff, which is kind of a bummer, because the Off thing isn't on there. Mm. But I don't know, maybe that's an oversight.
Do you want me to get you a copy if I can?
Oh, I don't know. If I start telling people to buy me copies of things that I can't get around here, I'm going to have a lot of things. But I mean, like, the Pogues one is on there. What else on here was kind of cool? There's a Live at the BBC set from Pissed Jeans, which would be kind of cool.
Oh.
This Nico Case Satellite of Love record is on there. What else here was kind of cool? This was kind of a neat reissue if you're a Ramones person, and you should be. There was, and I had to look this up to kind of figure out what the history was behind this. So there's a record coming out called Meltdown with the Ramones. So this is the story behind Meltdown with the Ramones here, from some website. So in 1978, WEA took over the distribution from Phonogram in the UK, and the first three Ramones albums were re-released. So in 1980, the record company put out an EP to support those albums. So it had four tracks that it cribbed from those three albums. So these are songs everyone's kind of heard, but with a focus on slower and not like very typical Ramones songs that you'd find on a normal kind of Ramones 45 at the time. And the speculation here was that they were trying to capitalize on the audience that might have been brought in by the new Phil Spector produced End of the Century. But anyways, this record was called Meltdown with the Ramones. Again, the track list is kind of weird for a Ramones thing. So it's, I want to have something to do, here today, gone tomorrow. I want to be your boyfriend, questioningly. Yeah. So it's like some slower Ramones stuff on a 45. So yeah, there you go. That's being reissued as one of the weird little things.
I might pick that up if it's like $12, but if it's like $20, I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, I mean, for music you've already got, kind of.
See, but there's always a threat that there's slightly different mixes, and if I don't get it, I would go insane.
So what are your stores? Where are you going?
I'm out in the Bay Area, so I'm going to hit up Radford. Oh. I'm going to hit up Streetlight, which is my favorite Bay Area record store. See, in the Bay Area, there's fierce competition. Streetlight, Amoeba, and Rasputin are the three big bangers. It doesn't pay to go to Amoeba because Amoeba is so famous that the line is like not only down the block, but it's down like four blocks. So you're not going to get anything that you want. But down in the South Bay, their Streetlight opens up at 10 and Rasputin up opens at 11. So you kind of get two shots at what you want to get, you know. So I'm going to hit up Streetlight first. And then if I don't get what I want at Streetlight, I'll go over to Rasputin.
Oh, very cool. I think I'm going to drive up to Hamilton. There's a couple stores I want to go to up there. The bigger one being Dr. Disc, which is there. And then there's a punk, little punk record store that's up there called Hammer City Records that is kind of like the retail end of a record label. It's called Schizophrenic Records that's up there that released the most recent TV Freaks record, which was great. So I want to go up there and check out their stuff. And it's, I've never been in there, and they exclusively carry like punk, hardcore, and metal. And I don't really care about what, you know, record store day releases they have. It just seems like a good excuse for me to go there. So that's what I'm going to do.
Actually, not to drag this out, but Adam, maybe you can answer a philosophical question for me. I was up at Amoeba this past weekend. I love Amoeba Records. I got tons of rare records, right? Well, not tons. I got five rare CDs. The question is this, though, is people that have the CDs that I got know what they have. They're not just CDs you can buy at Walmart, you know, like you have to specially order them or whatever. So why would people sell them to Amoeba when you can get like five or six times the value on eBay? I don't understand that.
I've got to imagine that, like, on the one hand, sometimes you're just trying to unload like a whole box of stuff and you're just like, just take the box. I don't care. Like, give me a whole pile of money and make this not be in my house. And that, despite the monetary difference, is easier than having to like sell things individually and then go ship it and pay for postage and blah, blah, blah. I can see that. I can see laziness take over. I've done that. I've gone and I've got, what could I absolutely sell, and filled up like a shoebox worth of CDs or something, and wandered to a used CD store and just been like, can you take all of this? Cause I don't want it in my house. And they start sorting through it. And I'm like, can you just not even sort through it and just like, give me some money and I'll leave. And then if you don't want any of it, just like throw it in the garbage. So, you know, I've done that. So maybe it was a result of that.
Well, fair enough. Well, Adam, do you have a hot tune for us?
Yeah, okay. So we're going to play a song from a band I mentioned on the show last week, maybe. Anyways, this is a band out of Toronto called The Beverleys. They recently released a self-titled EP through a label called Buzz Records. And Buzz has been behind a bunch of really fuzzy, I guess as per their name, and like noisy, I guess like punk and hardcore stuff. They've released records from Grays. They've got a record right now, or a band right now called HSY that people are really into. So anyways, though, so this is off of the 3-song EP that the Beverlys put out on Buzz. They are an all-female punk act. They are incredibly loud, incredibly fuzzy. Live, they're almost like punishingly loud. I had to really go like listen to the recordings afterwards and figure out like, did I like that because it was good, or did I like that because it was just really loud in my face? And no, it's good. So anyways, this is a song off that 3-song. It came out on February 11th this year. It is called This Is Not a Union. So this is the Beverlys out of Toronto.
Beverlys, and man, that was a ripping tune. And Adam, I'm not gonna give away the secret now, but actually my song plays off the theme of your song, so the Punk News listeners will have to wait and see it. And this was by mere coincidence. Adam and I did not, I guess, merge or talk about our songs beforehand, so this is quite a fun coincidence. Talking about another fun thing that people are excited about, Masked Intruder have just announced, I believe it's like their second LP. They've got a bunch of like EPs and singles and stuff.
I think this is the second one, yeah.
This is the second Masked Intruder LP. Is called M.I., I guess for Masked Intruder. It's coming out May 27 on Fat Records, and it opens with the first track called I Fought the Law, which in the article I put maybe, because I tried to be cool, because most people think I Fought the Law is a song written by The Clash. And I was like, well, maybe it's a Bobby Fuller cover, because it's a Bobby Fuller 4, to show the kids that it wasn't a Clash original, it was a cover. But this is how my Ikarai knowledge, I got burnt by the sun for being too Ikarai in my punk rock knowledge. The Bobby Fuller version is a cover, too. It's originally by the Crickets, I Fought the Law. But the kicker is Masked Intruder's I Fought the Law most likely is not a cover of any of those songs.
You know, I got completely burned on that when we were at like a music trivia night once, and I knew, I'm like, this is a cover, and I could have swore that I had the band, and I fucked it up somehow, and yeah, we lost points on that.
So it's the Crickets.
It's the Crickets.
Adam, are you excited for Masked Intruder? Are you a Masked Intruder fan?
I am hot and cold on Masked Intruder. I like them when they are being like, you know, a fast, goofy Ramones core act. Weirdly enough, I don't really like them for when they get, I guess, a little bit dynamic here. Like, you know, like this is a band where like they have, if they were just doing the Teenage Bottle Rocket thing and playing, you know, song after song after song that sounds exactly the same but is fast and fun and awesome, I would probably be as into them as everyone else seems to be into them. But the kind of like sickly sweet love song thing that they do, I just can't get into it. Like, and I get it. Like, I get why you do that. I mean, the fucking Ramones did it, and I'm cool when the Ramones did it, but I don't know if it's just because, like, the vocals are just a little bit too high here, that it's not like, I don't get the impression when they're doing the lovey-dovey stuff that, like, you know, when Joey Ramone did it, you're like, some sort of weirdo scuzzbag loser is singing this lovey-dovey song, and that's what kind of makes it endearing. When I hear Masked Intruder do it, it's like these vocals are way too clean, like they're too good for me to really buy the level of sleaze that I need to be into that. So to me, it just sounds like they're playing it straight, and that's not what I want.
I agree.
But I think that's an unpopular opinion because I know everyone loves this band. And I want to shit on them because they're, you know, they're a great band to have in the mix, but that's always kind of been my problem.
Yeah, well, I guess we're sleazy guys together, Adam, because I agree with you. I would wager, I've never seen Masked Intruder live. I bet you live they're a lot more fun than they are on record. For on record, I agree, it's a little too sweet, a little too monosonic, and people say, but the Ramones did love songs, but I think there's too many differences. A, the Ramones had some truly, truly, truly dark songs. I mean, Commando is a very dark song. 53rd and 3rd is a very, very dark song. And so to abut that with the love songs made both songs more, I guess, organic or different from each other and interesting. Second is, I think it comes down to soul. When you listen to me, Joey Ramone is one of the greatest soul singers of all time. When he sings, it feels as though, even if he's not, it feels as though he's really singing from his deep, from his core, from true personal experiences. When Joey Ramone sings questioningly, you know, I feel as though I know what that feels like, Joey Ramone. When Masked Intruder does it studio, when they're like, I love you, I want to go out with you, it just seems to me that they're just reading the words, and they don't really have the true depth of emotion that Joey Ramone has. But I agree with you in that I think maybe, Adam, you and I are a little bit more old school. You know, we come from the world of the Vile Tones. We come from the world of G.G. Allin. And so maybe the kids want a little bit poppier, happier stuff. And honestly, I would go see Masked Intruder live because I just to see if they're I guess more interesting live. And I bet you they are.
Oh yeah, like I would have absolutely no hesitation about going to see them live. And I mean, like I'll be right on top of whatever stuff they release. But I don't know. There's just I feel that there's a bandwagon, and I can't get on the bandwagon.
I've tried. I've tried, honestly. You know, I'm like, man, people love this band. And I listen to it, and it's like just like sweet song after sweet song, you know, and very clean vocals.
So I actually have the exact same criticism to some degree about the next thing that we're going to talk about. So let me jump in and read the story here. So Banner Pilot, who is a band that, you know, in Punk News Podcast history, I've gotten shit about before, has a new video out for the track Modern Shakes off their upcoming release Souvenir, which is due out on April 15th. Wow, how did I read April as October? Anyways, April 15th of this year, which is in 5 days, probably out by the time you guys hear this podcast, on Fat Records. And so you can find the video for that linked on Punk News. The video is over at Fuse TV. Now, the video is, it's kind of cool. It explores like 1950s Minneapolis, and so it's made up of all this, you know, cool old footage and stuff like that. But anyways, though, so you can go check out that video. Anyways, this kind of falls into the same category for me, in that like as a video, this is pretty cool. I mean, it's all footage from the 50s and 60s. You know, when Minneapolis was, you know, far more seedy, I guess, than it is today. So it kind of captures some cool stuff, you know, works thematically with what the band is doing. The video is great. No problem there. It's just that, like, I hear a song like this and I think to myself, I would love this if it was more scuzzy. Like that's my word of the podcast, I guess. But where there's something about it where I'm like, you know what, live I would probably be totally into this, but for some reason on record it's just, it's not got the, you know, like I want it to be dirtier. It's not something that to me benefits from sounding as good as it sounds coming out of the studio.
Well, I agree. For me, you know, I saw Off last night and it was phenomenal. You know, Dimitri Coates and Stephen Shane McDonald, guitar and bass, are just gone crazy. They're stomping up and down on the stage. They're not headbanging, but, you know, like getting down. Keith Morris is screaming and he's getting down. And not that every band needs to shout or scream, but it goes back to soul. I want a riveting, exciting performance, be it super fast, be it super loud, be it super slow, like Sleep or Black Sabbath. And with this band, is people love Banner Pilot, but for me, it's just too sedate. Like, it doesn't move me, you know? And I don't feel my body shaking when I hear it. It just seems to be, I want to say, anemic, almost tired when they play, you know? But people love this band, so it could be me.
You know what? I feel that way about a lot of bands than I see them live. And I'm usually live, it's totally different for me. And I feel that part of it is, part of it is the way that we're listening to music. You know, I'm listening to one of these songs on, like, you know, a shitty stream or a video off of YouTube or a SoundCloud thing or whatever like that, which is say it's fine for the purposes of sampling something, but, you know, as far as how that music is meant to be sound, I don't want to sound like a vinyl nerd here or anything, but, you know, it pretty much sounds like shit in the first place there. And then, yeah, then there's something about the way that these punk bands these days are recording themselves where I'm just, I feel like there's a way more interesting band that is there that was not captured in that way. And I think if you look at the way they're recorded from, like, a, Not that I know anything about this, but from an engineering perspective, I'm sure that the stuff that's actually being recorded is being recorded very well. Like, not to talk shit about producers or mixers or anything like that. Like, I think they're all doing their jobs and they're doing that stuff well, and they're, you know, they're giving the bands what the bands are looking for. But there's something about it where I'm looking at it and I'm being like, if you play a certain kind of punk rock, you almost need to have it sound like it was recorded in a can to really get across the emotion behind it.
Well, speaking of a band that Adam White has a lot of emotions about, Constantines have announced festival dates. One of their main upcoming shows will be on June 8th in Toronto with Broken Social Scene, Effed Up, and some other bands. In addition, they're going to reissue their second album called Shine of Light, interestingly, on Sub Pop Records in the U.S. Hmm. Adam, are you excited? Are you going to make the trip to go see the Constantines?
I will at some point. I haven't quite figured out where I'm going on this. I've avoided kind of buying tickets to Field Trip in Toronto, only because it's one of those kind of like 2-day camping festival things, which, you know, I could totally do if I didn't have like a job and a kid, right? So it doesn't quite work to do those kind of things anymore.
Adam, drop so, out of life and become a crust punk. Just do it.
I know. If I was just like a dirty guy that sat on the curb with a mangy dog, I could do whatever I want, but that's not the life that I chose. So, because my dog is not mangy and I have to bathe, I can't do things like that as much as I...
It's not too late, Adam. It's not too late.
Nah, I figure it is. The bank would find me, right? So anyways, the band is playing Sappy Fest in Sackville, New Brunswick, which is, you know, really cool, but like way the hell away from me. Peterborough Folk Festival, which is maybe a possibility, which is, like, despite the name, one of those things that plays lots of stuff that is not folk. And Ottawa, I don't know if I'm going there. I'm waiting for club shows for this. I have a pretty good idea that they're going to happen in the fall, and that's where I think this is really going to matter. I mean, I love the Cons; they're my favorite band. I don't know if I'm, you know, despite them being my favorite band, I don't know if I would necessarily go, like, drop all the money on going to see a festival where I don't really care about a lot what's happening just to kind of see a festival set from them, because, you know, a festival set's a festival set. It's going to be, what is it going to be? An hour, maybe?
Yeah, and, like, you know, just greatest hits, like nothing special, you know?
Yeah, so I want that club show. So that's what I'm waiting for here. I gotta say though, in terms of podcasts, Vishkana's podcast, Creative Control, which is recorded out of my alma mater, out of CFRU, which is the Guelph radio station at the University of Guelph. Anyways, I think I totally botched that. I don't think he records out of there, but anyways, it's out of Guelph. I went to school in Guelph. Vish's show is great, and the interview with Brian Webb that's on the show, which is about an hour long, is really super interesting because he kind of gets into being a being like a skate punk in the 90s in London, Ontario, and you know, getting into the post-hardcore scene that was there, and kind of the formation of Three Gut Records, which was the label that the Cons were on, that started in Guelph when that band was first starting, that a bunch of guys that went on to have really interesting careers, guys like Jim Guthrie and Royal City and stuff like that, the whole formation of the Three Gut community, and they draw some interesting parallels to how like Guelph in the early 2000s and the music scene that was there had a lot in common, both like sonically and politically, with what was happening with what people like think of as when they think of DC and the Discord community. So it's a super interesting conversation that they have. So if you're interested at all in either the Cons or just like Ontario punk history in general, you should go listen to Vish's podcast because it's cool.
Well, speaking of things that are cool, I've got a cool new track for the listeners to enjoy. This is a band called Workhorse 3. They're a three-member, I guess, drone metal, stoner metal band from Philadelphia. They've got a brand new album coming out called Fortune Favors the Bold, and this is the self-titled track, Fortune Favors the Bold, by Workhorse 3. The crunchy grooves, the crunchy riffs.
We are just a distortion show tonight.
Did you get smoked out by the stoner metal guys? Did you be a little lightheaded?
Oh, you always do.
Well, fair enough. Well, Adam, why don't you kick us off with this next story? Because this got a lot of hate, this story, but I'm actually really excited to see this.
This story makes me so happy, I gotta tell you. So, Johnny Rotten, Mr. John Lydon of the Sex Pistols, of Public Image Limited, he, amongst all the things that he has done post, I guess, in his post-pill career, if you want to call it that, and his post-Pistols career that have really driven people up the wall from appearing on like a one of the like
Judge
a
Judy.
Crazy from did he do Judge Judy?
Judge Judy.
Holy shit. Okay, so from that, from the butter commercials to having a show about bugs on the BBC, this sort of takes the cake. So Johnny Rotten is going to play the part of King Herod in an upcoming touring version of Jesus Christ Superstar. In the press release, Lydon said, "I am here to sing with the King of the Jews. Who could ask for anything more?" So there you go, Johnny Rotten in Jesus Christ Superstar. The thing kicks off on June 9th in New Orleans, and then runs all over the damn place and kind of wraps up on August 16th in Philadelphia. So you can find all the dates for all that on Punk News. This is pretty wacky.
Honestly, I'm super excited for this. First of all, I think a lot of people miss the obvious joke in that Johnny Rotten famously saying, "I am an anarchist, I am Antichrist," and he's playing the part of King Herod, basically one of the main villains in both the Torah and the Bible, who is often called the Antichrist. I think people miss that. Secondly, I think John Lydon has never been a person that's been restricted to any art form or any type of self-expression. I think he's an artist in the truest sense. And frankly, I mean, he's one of the guys that invented punk. And so he's almost infallible, and whatever he does is punk because he created punk. And so for people to say that's not punk for him to do something like this is stupid, frankly, and short-sighted, because I don't think there's any punk rule saying you can't be in a play. And in fact, I think – I mean, obviously, there's a certain amount of eye, like, winking or self-acknowledgement of Johnny Rotten in a play, in, like, a major production play, right? I mean, that's like a thing that people are aware of, right? And I'm excited. I think he's a very dramatic guy. He's a very dramatic singer. He's a very dramatic and artful person. So I think he's going to be awesome in this. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go to the Philadelphia date and see this. I'm really excited to see this.
The last time I saw the Pistols, which is actually the first time I saw the Pistols, so I'm just going to say the only time I saw the Pistols, on one of their many reunion things that they did, he performed the whole show with a bottle of whiskey in his hand and a binder full of lyrics in front of him, so he would not lose where he was. So I get that some of that might have been an act, or maybe was because of the whiskey, but I'm curious as to how he holds up in a play where he can't just, like, fuck off and make up whatever he wants in the middle of it. I think that, like, what I like about Lydon still is that he made a career in his 20s, or in his late teens, early 20s, of doing things that would make people angry. And he has continued to do things that will make people angry, and he has not let, you know, the music community beatify him, to stick with religious terminology here. Like, he hasn't, like, settled back and become, like, the comfortable kind of punk godfather in the way that, you know, someone like Joe Strummer or Ian McKay or Henry Rollins to some degree are, right? Like he's been like, oh, okay, you're going to credit me with the formation of this genre of music that has this certain set of ideals that you've attached to it, where I'm going to do the exact opposite repeatedly. And you'd figure that at some point everyone sort of wise up to the fact that like so much of what he does is to kind of like tweak expectations of what he's allowed to do. But every time something like this is posted, we get like ragey comments on Punk News from people being like, I wish they would go away. Like somehow whatever John Lydon's going to do is challenging your convictions in whatever you thought punk rock was. And like the fact that he's doing these things is making you uncomfortable. That's why I like him.
I guess if I can put what you said more dumber is I just love that John Lydon does what John Lydon wants to do. And he does not allow punk or whatever to put chains around him. And he never feels the need to apologize or minimize what he's doing. If anything, he maximizes what he's doing. And I think John Lydon is a true artist, and I think John Lydon is one of the few true punk rockers out there.
I agree, and I think we're still in the we're in the minority on the Pistols.
We are. We're losing the Sex Pistols war, Adam. I think we're losing.
We are. All right, before our next story, I want to jump in and give a shout out to our sponsor. We have a sponsor right now, and this is very exciting because we love these guys and we love to help help them out year after year. So the Pooza Fest is coming up in Montreal. Basically, nine different stages in Montreal, Quebec, are going to welcome bands from Toronto, from the USA, from all over the place, are going to converge for a weekend of mayhem down on St. Catherine Street. You're going to have bands like Dillinger Four, Mad Caddies, The Hold Steady, Reagan Youth, SNFU, 7 Seconds, Chicks Dig It, and just tons more. You can find the full list over at PoozaFest.com. Pooza goes down on May 16th, carries through to the 18th. There are lots of shows, lots of chances to see some stuff that you would not normally see. Over 200 bands total playing this thing. So really worth checking out. And again, just if you've gone to music festivals before, if you've gone down to Fest, you know, a lot of the times we see the same bands show up at those. And there's a good deal of, you know, of bands from that play the kind of Fest circuit that are on here. But the really cool part about Pooza to me is that you can go to some of these shows and, you know, get past some of the headlining names, and there are some crazy good local either Quebec or Ontario bands that no one's ever heard of that are playing these shows that are just excellent, that normally don't play the same stages as a lot of those, you know, a lot of the bands that are coming in from out of town, but they are in this case. So you should check it out. It's Pooza Fest. It is May 16th to 18th, and you can find all the info at PoozaFest.com.
Well, Pooza Fest, I know a lot of people are excited for it this year. A lot of cool acts this year. So it sounds exciting. And speaking of anarchists, let's talk about the World Inferno Friendship Society. They just released the second single from their upcoming album. The album is going to be called This Pact Funeral, and the new track is called American Mercurial. And what's interesting about this is their second World Inferno was founded by Jack Terrycloth and Scott Hollingsworth. Scott Hollingsworth left the band in 2000, but now he's back in, and this track prominently features Hollingsworth on the piano. And so plenty of listeners probably know I'm a huge fan of the band. I'm actually bummed out because right now, today, they're playing in Wilmington, Delaware, World Inferno and Morning Glory, and then tomorrow they're playing in this place in the middle of nowhere in New Jersey, Stanhope House, with Crazy in the Brain. So I'm missing two awesome World Inferno shows. But this new track is cool. It's kind of more of their soul side as opposed to their punk side, and I love it, man. I'm a huge World Inferno fan. I think this album is going to be another mature World Inferno album as opposed to like their punkier, rockier, snappier stuff. But I think it's exciting, and I think the band's current phase of them almost being Dean Martin-type characters, or I don't know if that's... Well, yeah, Dean Martin, very professional, very controlled, very on it, on the tip, fits them very well. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah, this is cool. I mean, I get kind of like the Red-Eyed Soul vibe from what they're doing these days. So, you know, this is... I mean, you want to talk about bands that are like consistently doing something that is, you know, is a little bit interesting, a little bit off kilter from what you'd expect, you know, is going to zig maybe when you thought they were going to zag, or was going to, like, you know, take a direction that might not necessarily be popular with like the fans of their earlier records, but like go into it like full, you know, full steam. Like, this is that band.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before and we don't need to get into it because we've talked about this, but I think World Inferno is by far one of the most unique acts in punk rock, and one of the most wonderful, most interesting. And I really think they should be super duper famous, but they're just not, because I guess they're just too weird. And so we don't need to get into that discussion again. But I love World Inferno. I think the new album's going to be awesome. So
yeah, this looks cool. So yeah, you can find the song on Punk News. Check that out. So so the next song that popped up that was streaming that a lot of kids got excited about was Cheap Girls out of Philadelphia. Are they Philadelphia? Everyone's from Philadelphia. That's my assumption.
Yeah,
my assumption.
I think they might be, but I don't even really know.
No, they're from Lansing, Michigan. Oh. Sorry.
Close enough.
Michigan. Michigan has it tough. I don't want to take away their bands.
They got the Stooges, man.
Yeah, but they also have like a crumbling dystopias of their cities because, you know.
Don't they also have Negative Approach? Isn't that Michigan?
Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, Michigan, Cheap Girls, they have a new song coming out. The song is called Man in Question. It's going to appear on their upcoming album, Famous Graves, which is due out on May 13th via Extra Mile Recordings. You can find the song on SoundCloud, or we got the stream on Punk News right now. Cheap Girls, I wanted to talk about them on this show, even though I don't really know anything about Cheap Girls, only because a lot of people in bands that I know are in love with Cheap Girls. Like Laura Jane talks about them all the time.
I saw them open for Against Me.
Yeah, so and whenever I've just like in passing went to check out one of their songs, it's never grabbed me to the point where I can remember checking out their songs before, except that I assume I have. So if that makes any sense at all. But like I listen to this and it's all right, but like I feel that like there's a certain amount of Cheap Girls stuff that I need to listen to that all of a sudden I will be in the zone where I will be completely into this band, and I'm not there, but I kind of want to be there because I think a lot of cool people are at that party and I want to go to that party. I don't even know if I'm making sense. Am I missing something? Like, how are they live? Like, what's the deal with Cheap Girls?
They're about what you'd expect. I think they're very symptomatic of modern punk rock today. You know, kind of the mid-tempo, reflective, I guess 90s alt rock, or even just 90s rock-influenced bands. So,
I got to figure it out. I figure there's something I have not got, so I can make no judgment on them. But I'm...
Actually, that brings a broader point, and I don't want to bring this up every podcast, but it used to be a time that we were the average age... the average age of Punk News podcast, Punk News readers, and now we're slightly older. I don't want to paint us as old men, because we're not old men, you know, we're still involved in the music scene. But could it be that just because we are perhaps a half generation older than a lot of the kids, and even a generation older, well, not half generation older, listening today, that we just don't have the tools to appreciate this mid-tempo stuff? I feel as though we come from a wilder school, or if not a wilder school, a more energetic school, that is the school of ska. Could it be that we just don't have the ability to appreciate this kind of music?
No.
No.
I gotta say no, because, you know, you can listen to something that has the same... you know, the same general, let's say, volume and tempo as a lot of this music. You know, you can listen to like a bunch of Replacement songs and be totally into it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that. I was feeling that with the amount of bands that are out there right now, and the amount that bands are able to promote themselves without necessarily needing a lot of label money, thanks to the internet, which is a good thing. But due to the sheer amount of that, a lot of these bands that would, I think, otherwise be more, you know, have more legs regionally that we may not have heard too much about before, are able to get a few steps further than that and get to the point where you know, we're exposed to them. And, you know, we're seeing a lot more, I think, than maybe we used to. So we're looking at it and we're going, hey, a lot of this stuff is too samey for us. But like, I think if you're there, if you're on the ground, if you see them live all the time, if you're in their scene, it's a completely different animal.
Well, speaking of a band that's well said, Adam, well said, and let's wrap up this podcast with a band that is a completely different animal. Devo's going on tour this summer. It's actually not that long of a tour. It's only about 2 weeks. They're playing both East Coast, West Coast. They start in Maryland, they end in Texas, but they also hit up California. It's going to be the hardcore Devo tour, which means they're going to be playing a bunch of tracks from before their first album, but also their first and second album include some of those tracks. I've never actually seen Devo, and I gotta say, I'm probably gonna go to this because I'd love to see Devo doing their best and earliest stuff.
Yeah, this is a good opportunity if you have, you know, haven't had that chance. I haven't seen them either. They're kind of all over the place in this one. I'm trying to figure out the routing, looking at their tour dates, and
it's pretty well. They arc up. Yeah, see, they arc up, then they jump over to Washington, then they arc back down, and they jump over to Texas. Yeah, so it's like a circle of the United States.
They're avoiding, you know, Florida and Georgia and whatever, which is probably good.
Can you blame them?
So yeah, so there you go. If you're in this general sea swath of the continent, you can you can check them out. So I guess one. So who's taking over? Who's playing guitar?
They haven't announced that yet, but they do have two guitar players, so maybe there will only be one. I know Josh was drumming for a little while. I don't know if he still is or not. But, I mean, the members of Devo are dwindling, and the loss of Bob Gesau, I mean, he was one of the founding, well, not founding, but like one of the early, early guys that developed a lot of the concepts. So he will be missed. So I don't know who's going to be it, but I mean, if you're a Devo fan, I'm thinking this tour is the time to catch him if you can, if you know what I'm saying, Adam.
I hate to say that, but people get old.
Yeah, so, but I mean, honestly, this is a cool tour. They're playing all like the early stuff, like in, probably in the punk rock style. Or I mean, when I use the term punk rock liberally, I mean not in their slow synth later style. You know, their more edgier style. So this will be cool. So I'll be happy to hit this up. And other than that, Adam, any good shows coming up that you're going to go to?
I don't know what's next here. You know, I'm sitting right now through the announcement of the big local festival that happens, and they're really ramping it up this year. But man, the bands that they're booking, you talk about Generation Gap, I don't care. So I'm just kind of, you know, waiting to hear which shitty little bands are playing the bars while the big bands are playing the park, kind of thing, and hoping that something there is going to grab me, because so far I'm just snoozing through it. So
I'm pretty excited. I'm going to a show tomorrow night. It's Masked Intruder, Banner Pilot, and Cheap Girls. So I'm super excited to see that show.
Are you? And I would totally go to that show, joking aside.
But other than that, I'm going to go see Ohm. A lot of the listeners might know Ohm is an offshoot of the band Sleep. They're even more Black Sabbath-ish. Well, actually, they're less. They're more droney, unusual. See, they're a very slow band, but like the music is intense, even though it's slow, which is why I enjoy it. I'm going to go see Gnarbrutes, one of my favorite bands, next week. And I might go see Get Dead, which I believe is a Punk News favorite. I don't even know that much about that band, but I might just go to see him. So that's what's happening. But other than that, Adam, I think that wraps up this podcast.
Yeah, I think we're good. We got another song, or are we just letting it go?
We can play a song, or we can – let's snap it off. Let's make this short and hard like a punk rock song should be. So as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Adam, thanks for being here.
No, thanks for also being here.
And we'll see you
next
week. Yeah.